Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. After sitting in the above manner, make the mind remember the three transcendental letters, A-U-M, or Om. And by regulating the breathing process, control the mind so as not to forget the transcendental seat. Purport. Omkara, or the pranava, is the seat of transcendental realization, and it is composed of the three transcendental letters, A, U, M. By its chanting by the mind in conjunction with the breathing process, which is a transcendental but mechanical way of getting into trance, is devised by the experience of the great mystics. One is able to bring the mind, which is materially absorbed, under control. This is the way of changing the habit of the mind. The mind is not to be killed. Mind or desire cannot be stopped. But to develop a desire to function for spiritual realization, the quality of engagement by the mind has to be changed. The mind is the pivot of the active sense organs, and as such, if the quality of thinking, feeling, and willing is changed, naturally the quality of actions by the instrumental senses will also change. Omkara is the seat of all transcendental sound, and is not only the transcendental sound which can bring about the desired change of the mind and the senses. Even a mentally deranged man can be cured by the treatment of the transcendental sound. In the Bhagavad Gita, the pranava, Omkara, has been accepted as the direct literal representation of the Supreme Absolute Truth. One who is not able to chant directly the holy name of the Lord, as recommended above, can easily chant the pranava, Omkara. This Omkara is a note of address, such as, O my Lord, just as Om Hari Om means, O my Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As we have explained before, the Lord's holy name is identical with the Lord Himself. So also is Omkara. But persons who are unable to realize the transcendental personal form or name of the Lord on account of their imperfect senses, in other words, the neophytes, are trained to the practice of self-realization by this mechanical process of regulating the breathing functions and simultaneously repeating the pranava, Omkara, within the mind. As we have several times expressed, since the transcendental name, form, attributes, pastimes, etc., of the personality of Godhead are impossible to understand with the present material senses, it is necessary that through the mind, the center of sensual activities, such transcendental realization be set into motion. The devotees directly fix their minds on the person of the Absolute Truth. But one who is unable to accommodate such personal features of the Absolute is disciplined in impersonality to train the mind to make further progress. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakayam Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So I seek the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas here in the temple room, many faces which I haven't seen for a long time, and those which are online. Please accept my humble obeisances. Vancha kalpa turupyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavinebhyo vaishnavabhyo namo namaha ananta koti vaishnavinda ki jai. So thank you for the opportunity to speak something on Srimad Bhagavatam. And I seek your blessings. that I may speak something of relevance. This topic is very interesting. Devotees naturally are very much, you have section of devotees which are kind of like a Rasika Bhaktas, right? Rasika Bhaktas are those which really hanker for the juice. They go for the rasa, they go for the transcendental mellows, relationships. But here in this verse, we can very much see how Shukadev Goswami is actually presenting the path of Ashtanga Yoga. Let me read to you a previous verse. So, and I think together we can identify together which are the stages of the Ashtanga Yoga presented in these verses. So this is verse number 16. One should leave home and practice self-control. In a sacred place, one should bathe regularly and sit down in a lonely place, dully sanctified. So anyone can tell me what are the first two stages, very important also for sadhakas, of the Ashtanga Yoga, which we also practice? Yama and Niyama. So basically, these two first stages are very important. Once I was on book distribution, and I met this one lady, and I asked her, have you heard about yoga? She said, yeah, definitely, I do it. So that's wonderful. What kind of yoga you practice? She said, I do Ashtanga Yoga. I said, wow, that's very elevated. So I assume you're a vegetarian. I assume you're having very pious lifestyle, correct? And she said, yeah, of course. So you'll be interested in this book. It's a vegetarian cookbook and goes very well with this. It helps you to make your sadhana practice very, very nice. So you can get this book as well, the Bhagavad Gita. I said, are you vegetarian? She said, no. I said, okay, well, you don't indulge in any intoxication because you said you practice Ashtanga Yoga. I said, no, I just had a pint or something like that. Well, that means that Ashtanga Yoga as such is not a very cheap practice. And devotees as such many times are following a lot of the points from the Ashtanga Yoga, correct? So in the previous verse, in the verse number 16, one should leave home and practice self-control. So straight away, Shukadev Goswami is presenting the point of rejecting something, right? One should leave the home and practice self-control. When we speak about self-control, it means rejecting something which doesn't bring self-control. Next step is, in a sacred place, one should bathe regularly. So straight away, there is accepting a new process, something which is beneficial. So straight away, yama and niyama are presented verse 16. And I was thinking about why is the reason why Shukadev Goswami is actually taking this path, right? We're still on the section where the answer, this first chapter and the second chapter are answer to the question of Parikshit Maharaj, what is to be done, right? In the canto number 1, we finished with the question or inquiry from Parikshit Maharaj, what is should be done by a person who's about to leave his body in 7 days? What is the best practice? So we should also remember what was actually the surrounding around Parikshit Maharaj, right? There are many different sages, many different saints, many different yogis, mystical yogis. Not all of them are, or not all of them have been sadhakas. Not all of them been bhakti yogis, just so we can remember this. So we can see the genius of presentation of Shukadev Goswami, right? The way he started is like, when you go with these, when you go with the flow, with the verses, he actually starts with presenting different paths of not which are not bhakti. He starts with Ashtanga Yoga, he goes with Gyan Yoga, he presents yoga as such, those which want to acquire mystical siddhis. So Shukadev Goswami is presenting the whole background and he's building up a momentum. So I don't know if I can skip a bit to end of chapter number 2. The conclusion of chapter number 2 is, actually, that would be, yes, here it is. So he's building up this whole momentum, Shukadev Goswami. He goes like, okay, this presentation is a presentation of the Ashtanga Yoga. He's tried to pacify all the sages which are surrounding Maharaj Parikshit, right? All of them are on the different paths. And then in the end of chapter 2, this is the conclusion. O King, it is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. Right? So it will probably take us a few weeks. But this is the conclusion of the second chapter. And this is the last verse of the second chapter. Those who drink through oral reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Him, the personality of Godhead. So there will be a whole build-up up to this point and to the end of the second chapter of the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we may see, if we take it out of context, we may see that actually Shukadev Goswami is instructing Parikshit Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, this Ashtanga Yoga is very powerful. You should definitely kind of practice this, right? After sitting in the above manner, make the mind remember three transcendental letters, AUM or OM, right? So, but if we take just this one picture, we can say that where Shukadev Goswami, you're the one who've been a Brahmavadi, right? And you got purified by the transcendental glories and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And then you become Bhakta. So why are you presenting something like Ashtanga? Is it truly necessary? Why you are so much glorifying the so-called impersonal Om, right? Well, I done a bit of research and I found very interesting statements, specifically by Jiva Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And these statements, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which are identifying that the Om, it actually depends on your vision of Atma. And let me clear this, right? What are the different representations or possible representation of the term Atma? Can anyone tell me? Mind. Anything else? Body. Anything else?
Endeavor.
Yes, anything else? The soul. Excuse me, mothers, sorry. Intelligence. Atma buddhi, that's like the intelligence which takes one to understand the spirituality.
The senses.
The senses. Brahman.
The self.
Fortitude. Nice, thank you. So think about all of these statements. One term, Atma, means so many different aspects. It means the senses, it means the soul, it means the body, it means the mind, it means the impersonal feature of Brahman, right? One terminology. So the point which I was making, the similar thing is with Om. It means the observer of that specific object, his representation or his understanding of that perceivable object is on the level of his understanding. Right? So if someone is on the sensual platform, this is what Atma would mean, or this is what Om would mean. If someone is on the spiritual platform who understand, I am the soul, Aham Brahmasmi, his understanding of Om will be on a different level. If someone is on the bodily consciousness, his understanding of Atma and Om will be on a different level. So that's why, but general understanding of the masses of terminology Om is very much impersonal, right? But hopefully we will build up a momentum where we actually conclude that Om as such has a completely different meaning for sadhakas or for bhaktas. Obviously we know, it is mentioned here in the purport by Srila Prabhupada that... here it is. The pranava omkara has been accepted as the direct literal representation of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Krishna, one of the names of Krishna is Adhokshaja. And this is interesting. Prabhupada mentioned this is one of his classes. He gives very nice presentation of this name, Adhokshaja. The beginning of the Sanskrit alphabet is A, right? And the end of the alphabet is something called Ja. Ja. Sorry? Ksha. 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 Aksha. So Adhokshaja means that from the beginning of the alphabet to the end of the alphabet, basically the spectrum of your possible presentation of your words, of your feelings, of anything you possess within your mind is restricted to these letters, right? From A to Ksha. From A to Ksha is your kind of a options, possibilities, variations and permutations of your internal kind of a mood. This is the only spectrum you can kind of present yourself. Correct?
Yes.
But Krishna is adhokshaja, which means that he's not possible to describe to the full degree by this alphabet. He's basically beyond the material conception. He's beyond the material realm. He's the beyond your possibilities of expression. That's the name adhokshaja. What does he mean? Prabhupada describes it that he is basically out of this material world. Therefore, you cannot describe Krishna fully, to the full extent. We know the pastime that Anantashesh, with all his many hoods, with the many heads, he tries to kind of represent all the qualities, all the pastimes and everything about Krishna, about the Supreme Personality of God, but he's not able. And he's been doing this since time immemorial. So that's quite a while. It's quite a long time. And many heads, all those many heads are actually simultaneously presenting different qualities of Krishna, simultaneously, for a very long time. So imagine how much Anantashesha knows Krishna, but how much is still unknown to him. So this, what this name Adhokshaja means, is the one who's actually beyond of our possibilities to fully glorify him to the full extent. So there's one very interesting point, which kind of go against the impersonal feature of Om. So as was mentioned here by Prabhupada, Omkara or Pranava. Pranava or Omkara is an indirect name of Krishna, the original sound of the Vedas, Shabda Brahma. The noun Pranava is made of two root words, Pra, and Pranu. So pra means very much, and nu means to praise. So the question was raised by the acharyas. Pranu means to glorify, and very much. Pra means very much, and nu means to praise or to glorify. So the question was raised by the acharyas. If you consider Omkara to be impersonal, how the root means to praise very much? Who you praise? How can you praise something which has no qualities, which has no form, which has no features, which has no attributes? How you may offer glorification and praise to something which is nothing? So this is very like a direct point. This is mentioned in Chaitanya Shikshamrita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. How may you glorify something which has no features, which has no form, which has no qualities, no attributes? Therefore, straight away, just cut. Omkara as such is not impersonal. Later on in Srimad Bhagavat Mahatmya, chapter number 3, there are very interesting point mentioned, quoting. There is no difference between Omkara, Gayatri Mantra, Purusha Shukta, the 3 Vedas, Srimad Bhagavatam, the 12 syllable mantra, the 12 features of the sun god, Prayag, Kala, which manifests the year, Brahmana, Agnihotra sacrifice, a cow, fasting on Ekadashi, Tulsi, spring season, and the personality of Godhead Krishna. So it means all of these features are fully transcendental and fully beyond the realm of fully beyond the material realm. And as such, later on we will find that actually the Omkara is very much personal feature of the Lord. In Sri Bhajana Rahasya by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in chapter 1, it is mentioned this. One who chants Om, which is the closest form of Brahman, approaches Brahman. This name liberates one from the fear of the material world. Therefore, it is known as Tarak Brahma. Taraka Brahma. Interesting point. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Vrindavandas Thakur, he is presenting on the equal level that Taraka Brahma is equal to Hare Krishna Mahamantra. One of the, I think this is somewhere in the Madhya Kanda, can't remember the exact reference. It is mentioned that this Taraka Brahma is actually very much personal feature of the Lord. And continuing with the quotation. O Vishnu, your self-manifest name Om is the eternal form of cognizance. Even if any knowledge about the glories of reciting this name is incomplete, still, by the practice of reciting this name, I will achieve that perfect knowledge. He who has unmanifested potencies and is fully independent manifests the vibration Omkara, which indicates himself. Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan are the 3 forms he manifests. The 3 letters comprising Omkara, A, U, M, and listen now. specifically represent the three names Hari, Krishna, and Rama respectively. The name Hari is not different from Hari himself. His eternal form, Swarup, is known as Vachya. So the form of Krishna, the Swarup, the actual physical feature of Krishna, metaphysical, spiritual, whatever you want to name it, is called Vachya. And there is terminology which represents the name feature of the person. And that is Vachaka. Vachaka. So it is said this Vachya and this Vachaka is not different from each other. Right? In the material realm, there's difference, as Prabhupada many times indicates or stresses. There's difference between the object and difference between the name. Correct? So if you will be constantly chanting water, water, or if you upgrade it, you know, mangolasi, mangolasi, or whatever it may be, you will not be satisfied. But by chanting the name of Krishna, by chanting and actually observing the Omkara as non-different from Hari, Krishna and Rama, you will get satisfaction. So in the beginning we mentioned these premises that the Mayavadis perceive this Omkara as impersonal, right? So we listed two references from Bhagavad Mahatmya and Bhajan Rahasya and Chaitanya Shikshamrita, 3 points, that how actually this Omkara is very much personal feature of the Supreme Lord. Directly A, U and M represents Rama, Krishna and Hari or Hara. Continuing with the quotation. These two forms, Vachya and Vachaka, fulfill all kinds of desires. Therefore in Chaitanya Bhagavat it is stated, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Continuing, Chaitanya Bhagavat in Vrindavandas Thakur in Adikanda 249, this is mentioned. The words Apana Samana indicate that Vaishnavas are the spiritual masters of the entire world, and inconceivably one with and different from Lord Krishna. One with and different from Lord Krishna. They represent the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Absolute Truth. And they personify the syllable Omkara. Right? So we went from impersonal feature of the Omkara to establishing the personal feature of the Omkara. Further on, establishing the non-difference between the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra from a perspective of the one who practices sadhana bhakti. That AUM means Hari, Rama and Krishna. Coming to a stage from the Chaitanya Bhagavat that actually Omkara also very much represents the Doya aspect or the aspect of the Vaishnavas. Right? Because everything is on the transcendental platform. So I'll repeat the statement again. They represent the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Absolute Truth, and they personify the syllable Omkara. Chaitanya Bhagavad Vrindavandas Thakur Adikanda 249. So this Omkara feature is completely dismantled from an impersonal aspect. Is that okay? Is that clear so far? Because that was kind of a predominant presentation. So even from the perspective of the Ashtanga Yogis, the Omkara is very much a personal feature of the Supreme Lord. So we covered the Yama and Niyama. Now just to kind of go slightly down with the further stages of the Ashtanga Yoga. So Ashtanga Yoga has that Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana and Dhyana. So it's interesting when I was doing like a study on the difference between Dharana and Dhyana, right in the Bhagavad Gita, is it chapter 6, right? Dhyana Yoga. Correct me if I'm wrong, please. Dhyana Yoga, in the chapter number 6. What does it mean, Dhyana Yoga? It means meditation, correct? But what kind of a meditation? Because Dharana also is translated in a Sanskrit dictionary as meditation. So why you have two stages which also which are the same in terms of terminology? Also meditation and also meditation. So I've done a bit of research. And what's the difference between Dharana and Dhyana? So Dharana, as a concept, means fixing the conception and containing substance in the mind of by retention. So meditation itself means it is already there. It is already retained. It already is within my head, right? The concept of the Supreme Lord, this is how he stands, this is how he holds a flute, this is what he does, right? This is how he moves. I already know, right? I already absorbed the knowledge. I already retained the knowledge. So the dharana concept means fixing the conception and containing the substance. Fixing, containing. That's the dharana stage. Or otherwise, we can also somehow, by observation, translate it as absorbing, right? So dharana could be also understood as absorbing the knowledge, understanding the knowledge, accepting the knowledge, right? And what is the best medium to accept the knowledge? Sorry?
Hearing.
Yes. So through hearing, you perform the dharana process. And in the dhyana process, it is actually the meditation, practical application of the accumulated concept. And later on, by constant meditation upon the concept which was already absorbed, the samadhi comes. Right? So in these few verses, 16, 17, and 18 as well, we will see the substance and importance of Ashtanga Yoga presented by Shukadev Goswami. But again, from a perspective of a sadhana bhakti. Just like Srila Prabhupada, like Prabhupada presents different terminologies and he says that's bhakti, right? Karma Yoga is bhakti. Buddhi Yoga is bhakti. Yoga is bhakti. Everything is bhakti. Everything that we think is from a perspective of, let's say, impersonal philosophers or other commentators, not from the specific sampradaya, other commentators on Bhagavad Gita have completely different explanations on the different individual chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. And the reason is their level of consciousness. So there are two levels of translations, or two levels, or two possibilities, or two options to observe any possible Vedic text. One presentation is literal translation, literal as it is. But Prabhupada presented Bhagavad Gita as it is from an ultimate perspective. Right? So that's what Shukadev Goswami and that's what Vaishnava Acharyas are actually doing. They present it as it is, but from an ultimate perspective, which is bhakti. There's another term jnana. Right? In general knowledge, in general understanding, jnana means knowledge. Right? Jnana means knowledge. Vishwa Chakravarti Thakur gives another presentation on what terminology gyan means. It means that by which something is to be known. That by which something is to be known. Right? What is the highest object of knowledge? That's Krishna. Right? What is that by something? What is that process by Krishna is to be known? It's bhakti. So even jnan from an ultimate perspective means bhakti. Do you get it? Do you get the point? So all these so-called Mayavadi presentations, all these so-called impersonal manipulations are actually just lack of intelligence, lack of Atma Buddhi, lack of ultimate spiritual sophisticated science of Krishna and the soul. Does it make sense? Does it make you get it? So this is the true understanding of Om, true understanding of Gyan, true understanding of Buddhi. Because what's the use of Buddhi, right? What's the use of knowledge? What's the use of intelligence? Intelligence is only a tool to know something. What is the high goals of knowledge? Highest goal of knowledge? That's Krishna. So how are you utilizing Buddhi? Buddhi needs to be utilized to know Krishna, right? Again, therefore, and the best way to utilize Buddhi is through bhakti. So that's the conclusion. So conclusion of every single chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, as much as it may sound even slightly impersonal, is actually Krishna. But depends on your level of realization. So that's why there are 500 versions of commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita. There could be more, there could be thousands. There could be millions, there could be billions, because it only represents your level of understanding of Krishna consciousness, or not Krishna consciousness. So to move on with this Om kind of a presentation, in the first verse, or if you can look at the first line of the verse, it is said, Abhyasen manasa shudham. Just like you're Shuddha Sattva, pure, unalloyed, uncontaminated, pure. Abhyasen manasa shuddham. Abhyasen means to practice. Manasa means the mind. And shuddham means pure. So it means pure practice of the mind. Right? Or to purify the mind by pure practice. So I was going through this interesting verse in the 10th canto, 13th chapter, verse 53, where just straight away after done his after Brahma done his bubu with Krishna, right? He stole the cowherd boys, he stole the cows, and excuse me. Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki, Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shri Gornita ki. So straight away after Brahma done his bubu and thought that he can, with his mystical Shakti potencies, with his yoga, he can overcome Yogeshwara. He understood that, no, actually, I've done a bit of a mistake, right? Krishna manifested all these cowherd boys. Later on, it is mentioned that actually he never stole the cowherd boys. He only stole the illusion of the cowherd boys. I mean, who can touch the friends of Krishna, right? Who can touch those which give intimate, direct service to the Supreme Lord? Who can touch them, right? No one. Just like Mother Sita, there's one of the purports, just like Mother Sita was never actually touched by Ravan, same time, the cowherd boys were never touched by Brahma. He never took them to the caves. He thought he'd take them to the caves and put them to sleep, but he never did so. He took the illusion. Right, just so Krishna could, you know, manifest his pastime and humble Lord Brahma. But later on, there's this very, very interesting verse, and this verse speaks directly the factors of subjugation of the mind. Right, we so much speak about the mind. How can you control the mind? But in this verse, it was just right there, straight in front of you. The ways or the aspects or the factors of true subjugation of the mind. Let me read the verse to you. Kala swabhava samskara kama karma gunadibi swamahid vasta mahabhir murti mabhir upasita. Translation. The Lord Brahma saw that Kala, count with me, okay? That Kala, which is the time factor, swabhava, one's own nature by association, samskara, reformation, karma, desire, karma, fruitive activity, and the gunas, the three modes of material nature, their own independence being completely subordinate to the potency of the Lord, had all taken forms and were also worshipping those Vishnumurtis. So these six representations or these six personalities presiding over these different aspects or different factors being worshipping the Supreme Lord. And Brahma saw this. So I was thinking, this is very interesting. So these are the six factors, and I'll repeat them again. Kala, Swabhava, Samskara, Kama, and Karma, and Guna. These six factors, if you can hack these six factors, your mind will be obedient. Your mind will listen to you. Your mind will be doing whatever you desire. Not even that, not only that, the mind will take the feature of the spiritual form. In a such a sense, because the soul in the spiritual world, what is he doing? Thinking, feeling, and willing. What does the mind do in this material world? Thinking, feeling, and willing. So what's the difference between thinking, feeling, willing of the soul and thinking, feeling, willing of the mind? Mind is perverted, soul is not. So when he said that this material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world, why we think we are thinking that we are the mind? Because we are in the material reflection. Does it make sense? I'm not saying we are the mind, but we are functioning on the level of the perverted mind. Because we still do think, we still feel, and we still thinking, feeling, will, right? We still do these three things, but we are not doing them as a soul, but rather as the mind. That's where all the confusion is. So these are the six factors which, if you can hack them, that's it. You're done. You're good. Your mind is listening to you, right? Your mind becomes spiritualized. So again, kala. How does the kala comes to this whole kind of a picture? We know kala is time, the pervading factor through all other ones. So kala, imagine kala as an individual investment, right? You have some money, you know, you're earning money, you get money, you have money. And think about Kala or time is money. So what you do, you're investing. This kala is given to you by providence, by arrangements. You have the time. So swabhava means one's own nature, right? Who are you? How do you perceive yourself? Are you a man? Are you a woman? Are you an animal? Are you a beast? Are you a tree? What are you? You know, are you a demigod? Are you, you know, from the lower regions? Are you from Bhurloka regions? Where are you from? Who are you? If someone asks you who are you, that's your swabhava. That's your immediate understanding based on your kind of how do you perceive yourself at the moment, at the time. So where kala comes to this? Kala means how long you've been investing into this swabhava. How long you've been investing into your understanding of who you are. Next one is samskara. Samskara, as we know, means imprint, right? How much time you invested in different types of imprints? How much you've been imprinting yourself with the modern culture? How long you've been imprinting yourself with this show which goes on the TV? How long you've been imprinting yourself with the songs you've been listening to? How long you've been imprinting yourself with the association you've been getting? So samskara means what kind of impulse has been going into our head? Kama. Kama means desire. Kama means lust. Kama means hankering. Kama means desire to receive something, to cultivate or to own something. Kama is the reason for karma. Kama is a reason for karma. So you have kama, you have lust, you have desire. Then you have the active principle and then you have the result of that activity. So from kama comes karma. Right? And karma means activity performed based on the agitation from the desire, imprint and one's nature. So karma means you receive the result of those activities. And that's actually the combination of swabhava, samskara, kama and also guna, which is the last point. Guna is the mode that which you are operating in. So how comes this come together? So if you're investing your kala, your time, into correct nature, if you're nurturing yourself correctly, properly, then you can become Krishna conscious. If you indulging your kala or your time into correct samskaras, into correct imprints, reading Bhagavata, associating with devotees, performing devotional activities, chanting Hare Krishna, then the result will be positive or spiritual. If you're investing your time into proper cultivating proper desires, then you can control your mind. If you're investing your time into cultivating the proper modes that you wish to operate in the most, then you can be successful. Then you can control the mind. Right? In modern psychology, people actually cannot understand this concept of mind. They just can't grasp it. It's something which is very difficult for them. But here it is. Brahma saw it. Brahma saw all these different factors or all these different personalities offering their homage and their respects to Supreme Lord. So again, by conquering these six things, right? In the Nectar of Devotion, in chapter 18, it is mentioned that a devotee doesn't waste the time. He doesn't waste not even a moment, a fragment of his time. He invests everything in Krishna consciousness. So he's the most richest person of all. Because utilizing the kala, the time given to him in a correct fashion. So again, just to repeat them and to conclude on this section, how to abhyasen manasa shuddham, how one should practice the purity of the mind. So do you remember? Which one was the first one? Or any order? Kala, time?
Swabhava,
ones of nature? Samskara or imprints?
Kama,
the lust? Karma, the activity? And guna? The nature or the modes that we are operating. So these six factors, these six principles will determine activity of your mind and ultimately your habits and ultimately success of your spiritual life. These six factors. Another point, and with that we will finish, is Brahma Bijam Avishmaram. Brahma Bijam means the seed. Avishmaram means should not be forgotten. So what is he saying in here? It is saying that you should not forget the principle or the seed or and the goal that you want to attain. Brahma Bijam means that the seed, the spiritual seed, should not be forgotten. The spiritual roots should not be forgotten. The goal should not be forgotten. The prayojana should not be forgotten. Right? You have samband abhidaya and prayojana. Prayojana should never be forgotten. So this Brahma bija should be implemented in every activity you do. What is the goal that I want to achieve? Right? You need to remind that all this. You need to remind ourselves all the time. Why I'm performing what I'm doing? Why I'm chanting Hare Krishna? Why I'm reading the Srimad Bhagavatam? Why I'm associating with devotees? Why I'm cooking for the Vaishnavas? Why are we offering these flowers to the deities? Why are we changing their dress? Why are we offering their food? Why are we mopping the temple? Why are we going on book distribution? Why are we going on Harinam? Why are we trying to spiritualize this planet? Why are we following the Sampradaya Acharyas? Why are we following Prabhupada? Why are we bow down to spiritual master? So that's the seed. That's the essence. And you need to always understand, because Avishmaran, it should never be forgotten. You have Smaranam, remembering, and Avismaran means forgotten. So it should never be forgotten. That's what it means. Brahma Bijam Avismaran. So what is the essence of your sadhana, your Hari Bhajan, your Sankirtan? So I will just conclude with these very nice verses. I think I already said them, but I can remind them, said them again. Again, they are the conclusions of the second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in conclusion of Shukadeva Goswami's presentations on the different aspects and basically the Yoga Ladder. O King, it is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify and remember the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. And another one is, those who drink through oral reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment, and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Him, the Personality of Godhead. So, yeah, just to wrap up, basically Shukadeva Goswami is presenting different portions of different types of yoga, and in conclusion of the seventh chapter, on the second chapter, the second canto, that actually bhakti, and which culminates in Shravanam about the Supreme Lord, is the essence. Omkara is not impersonal as it seems, is actually quite personal. And to conquer the mind, which was actually twice mentioned in the translation by Prabhupada and many times in the purport, is that we have these six factors by which we can conquer the mind, and by being aware of them, that's the way to conquer them. And ultimately, that Brahma Bijam should never be forgotten. The seed of your devotional practice, or the seed of your spiritual cultivation, should never be forgotten. And you should always remember, Brahma Bijam Avismaran, never forgot why we're doing certain activities that we do. So with that said, thank you so much for your kind attention. Shiva Prabhupada ki. Yeah. If there are any points, questions, marks, turn it up a bit. I will repeat the question for the audience. I'll repeat the question.
If that's not
in that sense, that needs long time of practice chanting Om before person manifests through, really. Like, you can imagine, you cannot come in the front of the altar and say, my dear Om, please help me in my devotional life, or something. You know, even if you are devotee, it's kind of Om. It's not, therefore, only self-realized souls, really, can see the person behind the Om. Like Prabhupada translated karma as bhakti, sankhya as bhakti, buddhi as a bhakti, and therefore was criticized by those who are not self-realized. So that's just one point about Brahma. It's not our practice. We can have understanding.
It's not our practice.
Initially, it's just impersonal.
It was mentioned here that the Ashtanga Yoga, or the process, is by mechanical regulation of the breathing process, and meditation on the Om can actually come. You can come to a stage where you you can start, or you start becoming eligible to start practicing devotional activities. Therefore, for devotees, Krishna is more rasik. Krishna, right? Krishna, you know, as you have nama, rupa, guna, and lila. Right, within that personal name, you have all the different stages. You have the form of the Lord, the way He stands. You have the qualities of the Lord. And then you have the lila within that name. Om is for those which are not on that stage. Yet they want to, they will. Based on time. Thank you for that point, Prabhu.
The short one, this question. Yes. In terms of Ananta, he's not able to describe the glories of the Lord. Even if he goes for millions of years. Is that because the Lord just expanding constantly, so he cannot cope with him, cannot catch him? He describes something and next moment 10 times is bigger, 100 times bigger. So in that sense, there's no end to it. Is that kind of...
I'd give a short answer to this, if I may. It is said that every individual jiva has a unique relationship with the Supreme Lord. Unique rasa. So there's unique kind of a quality of connection between jiva and the Supreme Lord. And because Krishna is Akila Rasamrita Murti, all the rasas are coming from him. So imagine he's the central point of all the rasi connections with the individual jivas. And how many jivas are there? Quite a lot. Quite a number. So what actually Ananta Shesh is trying to do is try to glorify the unique, intricate connections between the Supreme Lord and other living entities. So it goes continuously. There's so many of them. So many of us, so many unique relationships, so many unique variations, mutations, permutations of rasas. And if he reaches, as you mentioned, to the point, Krishna just expands and further on. So it's an eternal lila between Ananta and Tashesh. Yeah. Back and forth. Thank you. Thank you for the point.
Hi Krishna, Anjanga Prabhu. Thank you so much. That was a really, really nice class. It was just a point actually connected to the question or the reflection that Chona Prabhu had. Because in all these different yogic practices, you know, one can't really say that it's bhakti in itself. But if those practices are performed perfectly, they do lead you to a space of bhakti. So like as you mentioned with Ashtanga Yoga, when one now gets to Samadhi and witnesses the super soul within himself, then the immediate need to have devotion will culminate. So in all the practices, it's not really bhakti in themselves, but Prabhupada puts that emphasis because if they're performed perfectly, then they lead to bhakti, or the conclusion is bhakti.
Yeah, that's in the Bhagavad Gita, that's the yoga ladder basically presented, that even those of you who are impersonalists, even the semi-step between impersonalism and personalism is actually in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the Vishwarupa, the universal form. Because they only perceive like the energy, the unmanifested. But in the 11th chapter, you actually give a shape to that energy. Right? The universal form, the Krishna's, you know, hairs like the trees, that there are mountains of Krishna's body, the different demigods, they represent the different bodily features of the Lord. And, you know, in Srimad Bhagavatam, you can perceive as the body of the Supreme Lord. So Vishwarup is actually a semi-step between impersonalism and personal observation of the Lord. And then in conclusion, in the 12th chapter, which is dealing more about actually the devotional aspect, is the perfection of how Arjuna transmitted from the Vishwarup form that actually emanates from you. Therefore, even this impersonal feature and the semi-step is coming from you. Therefore, it just shows perfect yoga ladder. Perfect. Perfect. From the most karmakandic process to the deepest impersonal realization to the subtlest visual acceptance up to the point of actually seeing Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Sorry, mothers.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you for a wonderful, well-researched class. It was very interesting. You know, you were talking about positive result and success in Krishna consciousness. I wanted to know, what do you define as positive result and success in Krishna consciousness? Because Objectively, yes, we all have one goal, which is to go back to Godhead. But subjectively, we all have like a service that we do. So we have individually, because we are subjectively, we have those services, we might desire, you know, like the difference between liberation and love. Like you might, in the nectar of devotion, devotees desire beyond liberation, service of the Lord. So does that mean that the process of devotional service changes then between like your subjectiveness and objectiveness?
That's very nice. The goal and ultimate, like if you turn all the success in Krishna consciousness to a single fragment, it means to please Krishna. That's the sutra. To please Krishna. And because we have that unique stage of consciousness, unique anarthas to overcome, unique way to approach the Supreme Lord, the success means different things for different people. But ultimately, the churning down, to boil it down, means to please Krishna. And when Krishna is pleased, well, Krishna is a person. Therefore, he has his unique rasa with you equally. So, we've been just talking about it yesterday, that on book distribution, on Sankirtan, that what does it mean to be successful? Does it mean to distribute hundreds of books? Does it mean to, you know, approach thousands of people? Or does it mean to be, you know, distribute one book and not even receiving a contribution? To be successful means that you are one step closer to satisfying Krishna and building up your internal relationship with Him. So for a devotee, if pleasing Krishna means to stay within this material realm, that's the goal. That's no different from, you know, Goloka Vrindavan. If it means to please Krishna, to come down to this material world, that's no different from being in the spiritual world. Like out of our six Goswamis of Vrindavan, you know how many of them are Nitya Siddhas? I can show you a letter. Two of them. Raghunath Das Goswami and Rupa Goswami. So Nitya Siddhas means that they came on the, you know, importance of delivering this message of Krishna consciousness on the, let's say, because they are more or less on the camp of Radharani, they come to facilitate the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And the rest of them are Sadaka Siddhas. You know? So but there's no difference, you know, in the sense that if you come to this material world and it gives pleasure to Krishna, that's the ultimate goal. If you go to the spiritual world and it pleases Krishna, that's the ultimate goal. If you're pleasing your spiritual master and please Krishna, that's the ultimate goal. If you're a completely useless, unsuccessful person and it pleases Krishna, that's the goal. If you're at the top on the pyramid chain and it pleases Krishna, that's the best. Like you can see, we have so many Raja Rishis and they're equal, like Shukadev Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj. They're perfect, both of them. Yet one is from the Brahmanical caste, yet another one is from Kshatriya class. Yet they're equal. One perfected his life based on Shravana, another one perfected his life based on Kirtanam Vishnu. So it's perfect. So the turning point or conclusion is what pleases Krishna. In that specific time, place, and circumstances.
Thank you.
I can show you a letter. There's a very wonderful letter which Prabhupada said either to Mother, I think to Mother Yamuna,
Jadurani,
that these two personalities are Nitya Siddhas and the rest are Sadaka Siddhas. But again, yet no difference. Because already all of them are Siddhas, which means perfect. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai.